Where Nobody Knows Your Name is not filmed in front of a live studio audience. Hello and welcome to Where Nobody Knows Your Name, a Cheers podcast. I'm Barry.
I'm James.
And this week's episode is Season 10, Episode 17, A Diminished Rebecca with a Suspended Cliff.
Oh, fancy title.
Fancy indeed.
The notes I have from IMDb are refers to a complex musical chord, and I'm going to take their word for it.
Yeah, well, I've studied music. I wouldn't say I'm a good musician, but I've studied it enough to know roughly what a diminished and a suspended is.
When you've got the 3-5-7, the 5 is moved to either the 4 or the 6.
Yeah, so the diminished is the 4.
Yeah.
And the sus is usually the 3 is moved to the 2 or the 4. At least in my guitar days, a sus chord is the third goes to a 2 or a 4, I think.
Oh.
So there could be a clash there.
Yeah. It's nonsense, really.
So if any of your audiophiles are listening, then they may be able to correct us and tell us we're talking nonsense. But in this closed space, James, we are geniuses. All that made perfect sense.
When did this episode air, Barry?
I tell you what, I'll throw that back to you as a quiz. When did this episode air, James?
Well, I caught the ball there in some kind of volley. 6th of February, 1992. Directed by James Burrows and written by Dan O'Shannon and Tom Anderson.
Lovely. And a nice cold open. I really enjoyed the cold open here.
Yes, I liked it because it shows Woody's forward thinking, lateral thinking.
Mm. It almost puts Frasier into a trap that is always going to conclude in a way Woody knows it will.
Yes.
It's almost like a mathematical logic that in practice you might not want it to play out this way, but on paper it certainly makes sense. But let's explain.
Woody comes in with a golfing trophy, doesn't he? He bought it from a trophy shop.
Hey, Dr. Crane, look what I got.
That's quite a trophy, Woody. I didn't know you played golf.
No, I don't. There's a trophy shop down the street.
You just bought this trophy? You don't even golf?
Why should I?
Well, because the idea of a trophy is to show some sort of accomplishment. I mean, you should learn to golf. Go out, take a couple of lessons. Spend some hours mastering the finer points of the game.
And then?
Well, then you get better and you can join a country club.
And then?
Well, and then you can compete. Maybe enter some tournaments.
And then?
And then maybe someday you'll be the best and you'll win and then you'll get a
trophy, Dr. Crane?
Congratulations, Woody.
And Frasier gives him a handshake to go, well done, well done.
Yeah.
And I, to be honest, I admired Woody's logic here.
Yeah, yeah.
At times, I'm sure I've used a similar logic myself.
Yeah, there's definitely a thing, especially in the modern world, where people want the rewards. I think we move in a faster time now, especially in terms of media and things. So there's a lot of people who watch things like people playing games or reaction videos or unboxing, where the effort is someone else's and you're just quickly getting to the result. I think it's definitely a thing.
Yeah, similar vein. I'm also, as a kid, read the last page of a book first. how does it end? They weren't little girls, they were little women. You know, I haven't read Little Women. That wasn't what I was reading as a small child. But yeah.
That would destroy my soul now. I love to be surprised by an ending. And I don't think I could do that. I get annoyed when I accidentally open the book to the wrong page and I immediately avert my eyes in case I catch something that's
the horror,
revealing.
The horror!
Yeah.
To me, it's the sandcastle thing. And I suppose even as a child, I was like this, where, build a sandcastle, the tide will wash it away. And I think as a child, I just tipped a bucket of sand upside down and went, well, that's it then. just nothing else for me to do here. And I enjoyed that action of just tipping the bucket of sand over. But when you saw the more ambitious things and it was just going to be washed away, I went, why? I can't keep the sand.
You definitely err on the more logical thinking side of things. I would say I'm closer to that end of the spectrum as well. But someone more emotional might either find the joy in the doing or the fleeting moment that they enjoy. So a lovely cold open. Yes. But we move on to the main episode, and Woody is trying to work out what's different about Lilith. And after a few guesses, he decides that it's Fraser's grown a beard.
Yes, her husband's wearing a beard, yeah.
And Fraser immediately gives us a speech about how a beard gives him power and control over his own life. And Lilith has just pointed out she gave him permission to grow it.
I think he looks good in the beard.
Yeah. Yeah, we both sport a beard of sorts. A lesser beard, a mid-beard, I think we have. We're certainly not trying to win any competitions or get any food stuck in it. We're in the sort of the lazy shave area of life, aren't we?
Yeah. I think at one point I went almost Kurt Russell in The Thing, though. This was in lockdown and my hair was almost the length of his. And my beard wasn't far from it either.
And as a result, I must admit, my first instinct was to worry about you. It was definitely an isolation look.
Yeah. Wearing up just with crazy eyes.
Yes. So Fraser looking good with a beard. And then a visitor enters the bar. And who is this, James?
Woody's cousin Russell from Florida.
Yeah. And he comes in like a whirlwind, doesn't he? He's a right charmer. He compliments everyone, except Lilith.
I'm Sam Malone. I know. Woody's told me all about this place. Oh, Miss Howe, just as beautiful as Woody said you were.
Well, thank you, Woody.
Hey, there's Mr. Peterson. And look, Mr. Clavin. Hey, there's the Cranes. You're right, Woody, like she's seen a ghost. And there's Carla, right? And Tecumseh, and the jukebox, and the wooden lady, and the little porthole.
Hey, Russell, I guess you know who I am. I'm Paul Kratz.
Who?
He reminds me of, like, a young Kevin Costner or Scott Bakula, that very kind of aw shucks energy.
Yeah, Scott Bakula, definitely. Kevin Costner's always had an element of wood for me.
Sorry?
It's almost like there's an energy missing from him. Like, I want more from him. And I know that's his thing. And God knows it works, because my mum had the biggest crush on him for years. But I always felt like there's an extra 50% energy in there and it's not coming out.
But Scott Bakula, I mean, he gave it his all, didn't he? You just have to watch absolutely. Quantum Leap for that.
What am I
playing in this episode now? You're a monkey. Okay. You're a monkey with a gun.
Cracking.
Yeah, it's a great show. I do love Quantum Leap.
Woody's cousin, Russell, is here to visit. And Woody assumes it's because Russell wants to make the big time, just like Woody has.
He wants to go to the big city. Norm is quick to point out that Woody is a bartender.
which, you know, Woody, as always, seems happy with his lot, which is what we love about Woody. But while Woody is talking about how Russell was the dropout who never learned to fix air conditioning machines and other things that they would do in Hanover, Russell in the background is quietly knocking out an amazing tune on the piano.
Morse, why didn't I think of it before? It can be a busboy.
Hey, Russ. Sam, why don't we hire him to be the piano player here?
Russell's after a job, after all, and Sam only allows it if he plays for tips.
There's a joke here, which is a clever little reference, in that when they're thinking, because Woody wants Russell to work there, when they're thinking of jobs Russell could do, Russell's playing like a Roadhouse Boogie piano tune, right? And this prompts Woody to think that Russell could be a busboy. This is a a clever pun, because the Bus Boys were a popular group at that time, and they one of their songs featured in Ghostbusters, Cleaning Up the Town.
Ooh. Do you think that's a deliberate pun, or is it just one you've spotted?
I think it's a deliberate pun, because their style of music is similar.
That's the writers going the extra mile there.
Yeah. They loved Ghostbusters, the writers.
Well, didn't we all?
Yeah, very much so.
I adore that film. So now we move on. Another visitor to the bar, so this time slightly more officious. This is Twitchell, which is one of Cliff's... Now, he's another postman, but I'm going to call him a rival because they certainly behave that way.
Yes, played by Ray Burke. This is his last episode, unfortunately, but he does well, doesn't he?
Mm. Yeah, he does. He certainly plays a good sort of opposite to Cliff. I mean, he's Cliff's opposite, but he plays opposite to Cliff. Yes, let's not dwell on that poor sentence. So Twitchell comes in and, firstly complains about Cliff. Why is Cliff not out there on a beat like every other postman? And it's a question we might wonder throughout the whole of Cheers. Cliff spends an awful lot of his time in the bar. And then he says to Cliff that there's a change of uniform coming, an official change of uniform, and presents him with a letter saying as such. And what's Cliff's response?
He wants no part of it, Barry.
No. And I wonder why that is. Is Cliff just very proud of the current uniform? Does he not like change? Is it just because it's Twitchell?
I'd imagine it's that he doesn't like change and it's Twitchell presenting the information. Little spoiler, he does get a new uniform later in the episode, but is it also a sort of traditionalist aspect? You know, my dad wore this uniform and his dad before him.
Yeah, perhaps. It certainly fits with Cliff. Well, Twitchell doesn't like Cliff's refusal to take on the uniform and threatens to report him, which we will see the results of later.
For Russell to get more tips, Rebecca wants to move the piano down to the front so everyone can see it.
Yes. She bribes a couple of members of the bar, Paul and Norm, with beers in order to move it.
Yeah, which I don't think is a good idea, because the things that you hear with drugs and alcohol of any kinds is do not operate heavy machinery.
Yeah.
And a piano, I would say, is a heavy machine.
Yeah, well, and you will be proven right by the end of this scene, which I really enjoyed, where piano is in place and they walk away satisfied with their job. And as the camera pans across, they've left a trail of chaos and broken chairs and furniture behind them to get it in.
Oh, dear. Ironically, piano means soft and quiet, which is what they didn't do.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, James. Well, it was almost like an episode of the Chuckle Brothers over here.
Yeah.
They love moving a piano around.
I guess Laurel and Hardy, is this the similar thing? I think there's actually a Laurel and Hardy sketch where they're trying to move a piano up a flight of stairs in a Sisyphean task.
I love those old shows. My favourite was Abbott and Costello. I don't know why, but that's the one that tickled me as a kid. And Norman Wisdom.
Yeah, Hancock Half Hour, were you a fan of?
My dad loved that, but it's not. I think it was never played to me at the right time of life, I think. So piano is moved and Russell is very good on it, but it becomes quite clear that he has a crush on Rebecca.
Yes, particularly when he asks the colour of her hair.
Yeah, he then later sings a song to her about her hair.
The colour of romance, the colour of longing, the colour of the feeling I get when I see you smile.
Okay.
There's a really creepy joke in here about how Lilith and Frasier met, where Frasier is talked about as essentially a stalker that Lilith gave into.
You know, I've seen this type of behavior before. When Frasier first had a crush on me, he had difficulty expressing his feelings. He was very shy. So he expressed them in other ways, calling me at all hours, and then when I answered, hanging up. Just sitting quietly in his car in front of my house hour after hour, going through my mail and then carefully replacing the letters in my mailbox. In other words, stalking me.
I got what I wanted, didn't I?
I remember Frasier from that time, and it definitely sounds on point for him as a character. I mean, let's not forget that he met Diane while she was a patient at a mental health hospital in which he worked.
Classy guy, Al Fraser.
What's your tactic for meeting women? Well, it's one of two things. Or just farce.
Rebecca's concerned about Russell liking her. Woody's asking Sam about it. Sam doesn't seem bothered. But there's a really harsh line here from Woody where he says maybe Russell could give Rebecca the baby that Sam couldn't. And I must admit, I winced at that.
Sam did too. Yeah. Even it was a choice, Woody.
Yeah, that was a real jab in the side, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'll say it. It was below the belt, one could say.
Yeah, a knock to the baby maker, we might say.
He's got some harsh words at times, that boy.
I think that you could see why that might be. His lateral take on the world, as you said before, doesn't necessarily lend itself to the kind of tact that others might employ in telling white lies or skirting the truth for someone else's feelings.
I've got in trouble for that too. I'm going to go, what are you upset about?
Rebecca confronts Russell after giving him a lift home to his motel room and asks if he has a crush on her, which he denies. And as he previously offered her a coffee, she now feels safe to come in and join him for that coffee. And what on earth does she see, James?
Mural, is that the word? Shrine?
Could be. What changes a mural from a painting?
It's on the wall? I don't know. Surprisingly, I'm correct. A painting or other work of art executed directly on a wall. I was surprised that I got it right.
It sounds much fancier than that. Like there should be some artistic quality in there. But no, it's just thing on wall.
That felt like a QI moment. Yeah. What makes a mural? Oh, it's on a wall. Points to you. One?
Yeah, there's a brilliant moment in QI where it's one of those gotcha questions. And yeah, for our listeners who haven't watched QI, it's essentially a program where the guests are invited to answer interesting questions and give the most interesting answers as well. But there's a round where they ask a question to which the answer seems obvious, but is a gotcha. And in this particular question, it was, how many moons does the Earth have? And to which the man, Alan Davis, who's always caught out by these, replies, one. And it flashes and says, no, no, no. And Stephen Fry says, there's two. And Alan Davis says, but it's called the moon.
In that episode of QI, they go, blue moon, I saw you standing alone, not with a small friend.
Great. Russell has painted a kind of sexy giant picture of Rebecca on the wall behind the bed, and she's sort of got a little bit of scanty cloth over her chest and her groin, and is looking very sort of seductive on the wall, which obviously is a big shock to Rebecca. But two things concern me about this scene. One is the placement of the telly right in the middle of the room at the foot of the bed, where if you were lying in bed, you clearly couldn't see it. That was annoying. And the second is, he's in a motel room and he has clearly defaced that room to some extent.
Dave Gorman did something similar. He's a comedian, but he does pranks often, you could say, or just flights of whimsy.
Mm.
And one time he was getting construction on his house, so he needed somewhere to stay. So he stayed at a nearby hotel, which was called the Celebrity Hotel, right? And each room was themed after a certain celebrity, you see? So they had paintings or framed photos of the celebrity in the room. And by celebrity, they varied in their level of fame. One was the Elvis room, you know, international, huge inspiration. And then you'd have another room, which was Ken Dodd, which was a British comedian from the 70s, you know. And he went there once, and because earlier in the year, he told people how much a fan he was of Greg Wallace, who is a bold TV chef and food critic.
Yeah, and I've discovered that he eats off a spoon like a toddler. I now have a toddler who eats exactly the same way as Greg Wallace does, where the spoon moves vertically up past his forehead as it leaves his mouth.
But what Dave Gorman did as a prank was, on his birthday, he was given lots of Greg Wallace merch. So he checked into some arbitrary room in this celebrity hotel. It didn't really matter who the celebrity was. But he started taking photos of the room with his Greg Wallace merch and saying, "Loved staying in the Greg Wallace room." And people started messaging the hotel asking if the Greg Wallace room was free.
Oh dear, silly.
It's very silly, but amusing.
Well, so it seems like we could stay in the Rebecca room at this motel.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that's how our story ends, but we shall find out.
Say it again with, "We could stay in the Kirstie Alley room."
So we could stay in the Kirstie Alley room.
Ugh, look who's talking.
Very good, James. So Rebecca has seen this horrendous picture on the motel room. Cut to ad break. Of course you'd cut to ad break there. That's the logical place to go. So where do we find ourselves next?
In Cheers the next day, Norm has taken something called a snifter, Russell's tip snifter, which is a large goldfish ball type thing.
Yeah, but interestingly, I Googled snifter.
Yeah.
And the definition I got was, it's a small drink, like a brandy or something, which sounds more fitting. But I have seen those tip glasses, or they almost look like an oversized joke brandy glass, don't they? That is obviously, in Norm's hand, has become a giant beer, to which he fishes out several dollars to hand back to Russell after wringing them out.
What's the strangest receptacle you've seen for an alcoholic drink?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, a shoe. One of my friends used to drink out of his shoe quite a lot, and I think that was a university thing.
What? Cowboy boots, I can imagine, because they're leather. But if it's suede?
I think it was
slippers?
I think it was just a trainer.
Oh.
So, yeah, it would probably wash back years of effort into your mouth.
That was an odd, disgusting sound. I'm sorry. I've seen a traffic cone of vodka.
And our traffic cones are big.
It was more used as a funnel than...
Oh, I see.
I've seen... this will sound like a surreal rant. I've seen a gramophone of mojito.
Oh, that's interesting. We used to have... at university, we'd have parties where they would hire, or they would bring in, ice sculptures. And you would drink from, you'd tip the alcohol in at some point and it would come out at another point. And we won't talk about what those points were, but you would take your drink as it had run through the ice, which is quite good fun as a student. So yes, his snifter with Norm, but Russell is also searching for Rebecca, his love.
His muse, his desire.
He leaves the bar going to search for her, and Rebecca emerges from upstairs where she's been hiding for several hours.
She tells Sam that Russell worships her, and Carla mocks her for this.
She does.
Carla goes, "He worships you and you think he's a little off balance?"
This is where Woody reveals that Russell has previous. He is an obsessive type.
I get it.
And so he's previously been obsessed with trains in the past, amongst other things.
The punchline to that is when he thought he was a train.
Yeah. So it shows that his obsessions can go quite far. Rebecca is best to stay well away. So Rebecca decides she's going to be direct with him and just tell him that there's nothing between them. Next, we get Cliff's colleague, Twitchell, returns with a supervisor.
Yes, Henderson.
Henderson. From the South Branch Post Inspection Team. And he threatens to suspend Cliff for not agreeing to the uniform.
And a suspended Cliff.
There it is. Straight from the title.
It's a clever title. I'll give them that.
Mm. Cliff would never give up his postal job. He's too proud. So he agrees to try on the uniform.
I'll tell you what. Your boy Henderson has appeared in a lot of things.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think it's time to reel off our cast list?
I think so. And then we'll get back to this uniform while Cliff's changing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Harry Connick Jr. as Russell Boyd, the singer and pianist, has sold over 30 million records. And as of 2009, has earned the most number one albums in the jazz charts. He has also appeared in Memphis Belle, Little Man Tate, Copycat, Independence Day, Excess Baggage, Hope Floats, The Iron Giant, South Pacific, P.S. I Love You, Dolphin Tale 1 and 2, Nashville, Kevin Can Wait, Will and Grace, and many more. Ray Burke as Walt Churchill, as we said, this is the last episode. Paul Wilson as Paul Crapence, as we said, Henderson, right? Jim Norton plays Henderson. Are you ready for his list?
Yeah, I'm comfy. I'm in position.
He also appeared in The Face of Fu Manchu, Insurrection, Straw Dogs, Called It's, The Sweeney, Piano Smashers of the Golden Sun, People Like Us, Minder, Strangers, Nanny, Tales of the Unexpected, L.A. Law, Poirot, Memoirs of an Invisible Man, Even Hitler Had a Girlfriend, Lovejoy, Star Trek The Next Generation, Babylon 5, The Bill, Father Ted, American History X, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, Still Game, The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, Midsummer Murders, Water for Elephants, Mary Poppins Returns, and many more.
Wow. He has performed.
A lot of them. English shows.
Yeah.
Minder.
I suppose it all depends on, well, several factors, where your exposure is, and if your agent or connections happen to be more sort of embedded in certain culture, then you're going to get your jobs there, and especially if you do one job that gets you in the right circles.
But yeah, Minder, Still Game, Midsummer Murders. Interesting. Yeah.
As Cliff goes into the toilet, it turns out that Henderson is Twitchell's brother-in-law, Frank.
Oh, dear.
And they are going to play a... Well, they have played a prank on Cliff, and they've set him up to put on a silly uniform.
And he reemerges, and it's very Sergeant Pepper.
It is very Sergeant Pepper, isn't it? A lot of tassels.
Yeah.
A bit Kaiser.
But he seems happy.
Yeah, he's very proud of it. He loves it. So it's a prank that's gone very right in some ways.
While this is going on, Rebecca's told Russell that she doesn't need that much attention. She says that's what Carla told him. Russell resentfully says he won't pursue Rebecca anymore, and saddened that his doodles and songs couldn't win the heart of a woman as beautiful and wonderful as her. And he leaves.
Yeah.
It starts to pull at Rebecca's heartstrings.
Yeah, well, you can see that Rebecca likes the attention. She likes someone who is very openly and honestly flattering and in love with her. And she thinks, well, I'm not getting that anywhere else. And maybe this isn't such a bad idea after all.
It's a dangerous thing, that getting attention.
Mm.
Well, for the very reason you said, if you're taking it where you can get it, might not be the most pragmatic choice.
Yeah, there's definitely, if someone's interested in you, it puts a thought in your head that wasn't there before.
Exactly.
If you weren't interested in that person, but suddenly someone's added an option to your table. And of course, then having the option in front of you consider it.
Yep.
It's probably a clever negotiating tactic in some ways. And certainly if you get offered, if you saw a job on paper that you thought, no way, someone offers you that job, suddenly you're thinking about it.
Yeah.
I reckon.
It's nice to feel wanted.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah. So Rebecca decides that maybe she'll give him a go. And so she heads straight back to the motel room, and there's loud music playing in there. She's trying to knock on the door and get his attention, and she can't, so she just walks in.
Yeah, and the mural, it is a changing.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah. How has it changed, James?
Carla's face.
Yeah, Carla's face has been painted over Rebecca's, which looks funny and ridiculous in one point because the differences in stature, but also it's quite telling of how fleeting, or how Russell just needs to fixate, because there's very little chance that someone who was interested in either Carla or Rebecca would be interested in the other. They're wildly different individuals.
Yes. Yeah. There's the fleeting nature of, not love, but the fleeting nature of desire.
And that's the end. It's a good bombshell to go out on. a good way to save Rebecca as well.
Here's a little fact to the end of the episode before Cliff comes with his new outfit. On Will and Grace, Grace nearly became engaged to Woody Harrelson's character. And later in the series, she marries Harry Connick Jr.'s character. So in other words, she had both Boyds, is how IMDb phrased it.
Yeah, that's good. Well, thank you for that, James. Did I just hear the doorbell?
You did, yes.
How's he looking out there?
It's something to behold. Yes, it's a sit back and enjoy the show.
I'll give his tassels a rustle from me, and let's see what he's got for us.
A rustle, you say? But as usual, before we open our letters, we have to give a shout out to our norms on Patreon. So this goes out to Treb Curry. If you want that special norm treatment, then check out our Patreon page for that and so much more. Here's one. What amenities does Woody's apartment offer?
Oh, they weren't very attractive amenities. Fold-out bed.
A couch almost opens out into a bed. Yeah.
Noisy neighbours. Because he's off the alcohol or something like that.
Yeah, and there's one more.
Something to do with the kitchen?
Tangentially, but not really.
Oh, go on, fill me in.
Couch almost opens out into a bed, heat and hot water most days, and usually quiet, except this week where the couple next door is off the wagon.
Yeah. Oh, well, at least someone's having fun. Here's one from me, James. What time could you hear Russell coming through town as a train in Woody's story?
Oh, that's a good question. It's not 11:52. 7:53.
Whoa, spot on.
What colour does Rebecca call her hair? How does she describe her hair colour?
Oh, is it chestnut with a hint of auburn?
I'm going to give you a point for that. Medium chestnut with auburn highlights.
That's it. When Rebecca says to Russell, I'm nobody, I'm nothing. And Russell says, yes, that's what Carla said. Who else does Russell claim said that as well?
Everyone, basically. Norm, Cliff, John Allen Hill, Ruben, the busboy.
Yep, so you've got one more.
Frasier?
No.
It's Paul.
Paul is on the list, yeah. So it's Carla, Cliff, Paul, Norm, Woody, Ruben, the busboy, and Mr. Hill upstairs.
Yeah, bit mean.
I will give you 0.82 points.
That seems fair. I do like the name drop of Ruben the busboy, though. I like how Cheers has their recurring unseen characters.
Yeah.
What is Russell's apartment number or room number?
Oh, 14.
No.
53.
I mean, you're a long way off.
229.
You're getting closer, but you're still going to be a cold night for you.
No. Golf trophy me, James.
506.
506. Wow, that's big.
Which means it's on the fifth floor, sixth room.
Oh, Rebecca made some effort then to go visit him.
Yeah, I wouldn't
have gone up. I would have just dropped. I would have had that conversation in the car.
Yeah. Oh, we've got another letter here. It's from our friends at Zencaster. Hey, podcasters. Want to bring your own little joy to your bar? A little music for your ears? Then go no further at Zencaster, where everybody knows your name. Head over to zencaster.com/pricing and use code NORM for 30% off your first month of any Zencaster paid plan. It's like getting your own little spot at the piano yourself, your own little bar stool where you can drink a large glass full of money. Got rich sound quality, an all-in-one user interface, user friendliness, and even better savings. So hop on board Zencaster now.
Yeah, and we've used Zencaster from almost the beginning, haven't we?
At some point we started using it and we haven't looked back.
Yeah. What should we drink this week then, James?
That's a good question. How about something called The Piano Has Been Drinking?
Is that a drink?
Apparently so.
Ah. And we'll spray ourselves with a bit of Calvin Klein's Obsession as well.
Excuse me?
I seem to remember that advert.
I know The Piano Has Been Drinking as a Tom Waits song.
Oh, it's also a drink. Let's clink our snifters and say cheers.
I thought you'd never ask. Thank you for listening, everyone.